My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. And I woke up this morning with a hangover or regret what I did last night because I was sober. And I couldn't say that on many mornings. And that was a something I told my wife about 3 or 4 weeks into sobriety. She asked how I was doing on a Sunday morning. I said, well, I woke up without a hangover or regret for what I did last night. And that has been true ever since February 10th of 2020. February 9th is my sobriety date. And first of all, I'm grateful that everyone, that person reached out to me to speak tonight, because I like to carry the message as I received it, and I received it out of this this book by first of all reading the first 164 pages, as my sponsor asked me to do. And while I was reading it, I went to a big book study, and it was on working, helping others. And on page 95, it says, when first meeting an alcoholic, lend them your book. And on the very next page, it says, if he's read in the interval, if he's read this part of this book, and he's willing to work the steps with him. And I grew up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Both of my parents were from Prague, Czechoslovakia. And they left communist Czechoslovakia in 1968, and I was born in 69. And in 1977, my father got sober as a result of this program, and is still an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't start drink. I had my first drink when I was 12, and it was at my grandmother's house in Prague. After my dad said no, they don't need anything to drink, they went into another room, and my grandmother gave me wine, and I remember that. I remember that because it was so different, because the 4 years, 4 or 5 years earlier, I see my dad turn from a drunk laying on the floor to happy, joyous, and free, and it was because of drinking. And when I was in I played sports in school, so I didn't have my first drink till I was 16, but I went at it hard and furious. And I heard at a meeting the allergy, that craving is the second one was automatic. And that was what it was like for me. And I played football, soccer, and basketball in high school, and went to Penn State of Wilkes-Barre to get a associate degree. And I played soccer while I was there. And one of their team mottos was "Win or lose, we still booze." We went 0-13-1. We were able to tie one game. And during that college career, which I got through with a 2.04 after begging for mercy from a physics professor, during that time, I had one of my four experiences that qualified me for the rooms through that feeling of loneliness that few felt. And that was after after the soccer season. It was December of that first year. We were drinking rum and cokes all night at a cabin. And somebody was in the bathroom. And instead of going to the bathroom, I said, I'm gonna go out the back door. I rolled out the back door and cut my head open with a tree. And my solution for that was not to drink rum and cokes anymore. And I changed that because when I was in the Caribbean, I was able to do that. And continued to drink in my 20s based on the work experience of others. When they said all you have to do is show up, I was an engineer, sales engineer, and when they said all you had to show up with a company either polo shirt or button down shirt at 8 o'clock in the morning, we don't care what you do when you're when you're traveling. I took that up in earnest. And in my 20s, I did what people in their 20s in Washington, D.C. do when they drink. They find a local pub, and I chose my house based on the townhouse based on the fact that it was across the street from a Giant, the Ashburn Pub, and a Blockbuster. And there I met my other fellows that drank like I did. So we got a beach house in Dewey Beach in the summer when I was 26 and 27. And during that time, I met my wife on online on AOL. She had a common interest. We were both big time or college sports fans of football. And what a better excuse. I went to West Virginia and I went to Penn State. And what I would tell people that thought I went to main campus, I let them think that. And so I let her think that I was that I got a 4-year degree, I got an associate degree. And that was also part of my story, the lying of who I was, where I was, and what I was doing. And we decided, and during that time, I had my second experience of changing alcohol, as it talks about in the big book, more about alcoholism. We were at a party one I worked out, and then I went to the pub, and the pub closed. I was like 28 years old, so we went to an after party at my friend's house. And the first time I had been any kind of flavored vodka was straight out of a bottle. And instead of waiting, I was drunk again. Instead of waiting for the bathroom to line to go down, I said, I'm going to go out back. But instead of going out back, I went out front and planted another cut on my head. And my solution for that was to not drink straight out of the bottle. And I did that until I was 50 years old, and that stayed with me. And then my wife and I got married, and I joined a drinking club with a golf pro. And about 2 years into marriage, we're trying to have kids. So what better lubricant than alcohol? And when I read the big book, Bill's story, he took up the game of golf so he could drink morning and night, and that was me for 2 years in 2005 to 2007, when we decided to have children. We decided to adopt from Russia. Because Russian and Czech language is very similar. And we wanted two children, which I'm grateful that we followed through on that. They're 20 and 22 today. So we have to go to Russia 3 times, once for our first visit. And that adds to that feeling of alcoholics drink at exactly the wrong time, that feeling of loneliness, that, what am I got myself into? We visit with my son and daughter for the very first time, but we didn't take a picture because we only saw them for 45 minutes. We're playing in the playroom, and then we go to dinner and drink because their dinner and drinks were part of the package of the adoption. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this sign that said Bar Casino in a 4,000 person town in Russia. And the first thing I thought was Las Vegas. Their idea of a bar casino was a bar with two slot machines on the other ends of the bar. And I drank vodka all night, not speaking. I told my wife, I'll be right back. And she, this is one of the many times that I told her I'll be right back. And then I came back in a blackout, and we knock at the door, Mr. Tom, Miss Diane, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. We have to go visit Victor and Natasha before we fill out paperwork in the town. And I was still drunk, and I got a picture of myself, Victor and Natasha, and I'm hanging over like this. They're 3 and 5 years old, and when next morning we take the train ride back to St. Petersburg, and my wife said, "That's a great picture of you and Victor and Natasha." And as soon as I saw that picture, it still gives me chills. I felt that drunk in that picture. The red ears, red nose, that 1,000-yard stare, and that shit-eating grin that I had at every barroom or backyard deck party that I had ever been to. And I drank for the effect caused by alcohol, regardless of whether it was injurious or not. And I continued to since I played soccer, and they were 3 and 5 years old, we got them into soccer right away. And that changed my facilities of my drinking. From the bar room to the basement and the deck, whether it was my deck or your deck was better because you probably had better alcohol than I did. Because friends of mine would come over and I'd have a beer cooler, I'd have a refrigerator of beer, but there was never any when my buddies came over because anything in that refrigerator was drunk. And I heard that when somebody shared that at a meeting. At a speakers meeting on Friday night, I'm like, I can relate. I was that guy that wanted the fully stocked refrigerator, but it was always empty. Or that whenever I brought a bottle into the house, it would go. And my wife wasn't a big drinker, so I'd invite the neighbors over, the ones she liked and the ones she didn't care for, and she. By the grace of God, she stayed with me. I did enough I'm sorries and flowers at the right time, and she was busy with our two children that didn't speak English, and that allowed me to drink the way that when I could, and I coached their soccer team for about 10 years. While drinking at in the evenings and also on business trips, and when I guess again when the alcohol was free, it was easy, and that craving kicked in. The mental obsession wasn't there until later. That was just how I that was just how I lived. And in about 2017, they no longer wanted to play the game of soccer. So I took up the game of golf so I could drink morning and night. And at the golf course that I belonged to was an 18-hole par three course, just like I went to Penn State as a and got an associate degree. I told everyone I went to the country club. It was a redneck country club. It cost $1,000 a year, and you could bring your own bottle, and they would pour it, and they would pour it for you. And those times that I tried to control my drinking were one the summer of 2018. I bought a Triumph Spitfire. It was a stick shift out on a whim. It was $2,800. I had it in the bank account, so I bought it on Craigslist and it drove. And I said, I'm not going to drink shot because I'm driving the stick shift. I'm not going to drink shots anymore. But there was a flaw in that. I told my buddies at the bar and they bought me shots. And in my mind that I wasn't paying for the drinks. So that that control failed. And, the first year of that experience like Jimmy Buffett. The second was like Animal House, and the third year was parts of leaving Las Vegas, where you'd throw up at hole number six and finish what you had in the bag. We would walk this small golf course with those push carts, and we carried coolers with us because we couldn't wait until the ninth, 10th hole, which is the clubhouse. And there were times, and I also suffer from that issue that Dr. Bob had. I ne never got that piercing headache my fellows got, but I did sweat. I did have stomach issues and other things, and it would piss off my wife. I'd get go all day and half the night, and pass out or go upstairs in the morning. Like, how's your head? I said, oh, it's fine. The rest of me's not doing well. And there were many times during that last year that she would say, "Don't you love me? What are you doing driving home drunk?" And I also had, I thought I was outsmarting the system because I worked for a telecommunications company, and they sent me to a training class for driving their vehicles. And they said, if you make a right turn, you're 67% less chance of you getting into an accident. So of those four or five spots that I frequented, I made sure that I on my way home, that was the right, it was the right turn. I was playing it it safe. And those times that I didn't have to drive, those were blackout times. And those were during conferences, because by that time I was in sales, and just not giving a crap at all whether I was working or it was working. And in the December 31st of 2019, after a rough Christmas, and I'll just leave it that, I said to my wife, we need to do something on New Year's Eve during the day so I could be half functional, and you'll have a good time too. So I said, let's go to the Torpedo Factory, which is like an art museum craft place in Alexandria that people, yeah, artists have little cubbies there, and but they had wine at these at the places, and I was half in the bag, and we went to lunch, and then we went back to there, and then I told my wife that my friend who I golfed with was owned a pizza place in Arlington. Now, mind you, I told you I'd always exaggerate things. He was the part-time pizza guy, part-time bartender, and he was that was that re when he didn't have any time for me, that was that resentment that sent me on a full 6 week bender. Now, those other times I talked about, I had been on the drinking up until that time, and then slowed it down, and when that happened, when he didn't have any time for me, I drank more and more, and I continued to go to those places that served cheap alcohol. And go to those parties with the neighbors that provided me my supply, and it was I said and then it was the NFL championship games were going on, and I told my wife, I'm going to stay home today. I'm not going to go out, and I couldn't make it through the second game. Even though I was drinking, she was allowed me to drink beer there, but not hard liquor by this point. And I said, I can't. I'm gonna go out. And I go to the local pub that was across the, literally almost across the street from my house. And at 10 o'clock at night on a Sunday, when everyone's been drinking all day with their buddies, nobody had time for this drunk. And I copped another resentment. But I had I was like, oh man, I know what can fix me. I grew up skiing with my father and mother and brother. And there's a conference that I don't know what, how we think of these things, but travel was the solution. There was a conference coming up in Colorado in 2 weeks, and I said to my wife the next morning when I asked my boss to go to this conference, and I'll go, and I Googled skiing places that were cheap, and there was an afternoon skiing at A Base, and I was like, okay, that's a reason to talk your boss into going to a Air Force conference because there's a that's cheap skiing and you can clear your head, and so it was Super Bowl Sunday. I after. Like I said, I was drinking every day. I got on a plane at 6 a.m. and went to the to Denver at 9, stopped and got breakfast, and put all my brought all my ski stuff. I was sweating at the time because every morning that was my routine to get rid of the alcohol in my system, but I needed more in the system. And I get to the I'm like, okay, I'm going to ski a couple times and maybe have a drink at the ski area. And I get in all my stuff on, get in line, and my idea of afternoon skiing is 1 to 5. Sorry, noon to 5. Their idea was 1 to 3. I get to the line and they say, you can't come here, but there's a drink special over there in the bar, a Bloody Mary and a beer for like 10 bucks. So I get two of each. And I go to the top of the mountain and I have that overwhelming feeling of, oh man, I just added alcohol to the last thing I love doing sober. I really enjoyed doing that sober. But that didn't stop me. I still skied that day, hungover and then drunk. And those people that I was going to meet, because my idea was to go first commune with nature, and the other one was to go and meet other people. And for 2 days, I didn't meet a single soul other than the person who let me into the Airbnb. And I go to the conference. And I'm not staying at the same hotel as my colleagues because I booked it 2 weeks before the conference. And there was 6 inches of snow on the ground, but there was a Outback Steakhouse right across the street. And I've heard this from other people in the rooms. I go to the Outback, have drinks with my meal. One set of people come in. I have then they leave. I continue to drink from 9 to 10 or 10:30, and those second set of people come and then they go, and then the lights come on at the Outback. I said, okay, now I really got to go. And during that week, I drank like it was the like it was a frat party. And after I got sober, I've been to 20 of those before I got sober, and I didn't pick up maybe two business cards each time. And now I go there for go to these places to meet people that I can do business with. And during that week, one of my friends from high school, he's for high school, became a three-star general. And I met him in the lobby, him and his wife, and we have a picture together. And I do not recall running into him. I knew that he was speaking the next day, and I didn't go to that because I was so hungover. But that Thursday, as I said, and after many conferences, I'm not going to drink today. And by Friday at 5 o'clock, I was drunk and doing what I did. I went for free poker. It always cost me $70 to win free poker. And that was Friday. Saturday morning, I said, I'm not going to drink today. And I said, oh yeah, I have a thing at a local bar for a golf thing that they were doing over the summer. So I'll go to that. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting in a poker game at somebody's house I didn't know, going, what am I doing here? I had that moment of clarity. I cashed in my chips and I drove home. I was like, uh-oh, this isn't working. And the next day was by the grace of God, my son had been drinking and driving that past Friday night. And my wife told me about it over her coffee and my solution to a hangover, which was a 32-ounce bottle of Gatorade. And she said that he's been Friday night he was drinking and driving and made it home. So okay, so I Googled an AA meeting for him. It was a beginner's meeting, and I knocked on his door and I said, "Victor, I heard you were drinking and driving last Friday night, and I think we should go to a beginner's AA meeting." And he said, "You go first." And that was loud enough for my daughter to pop out of her room and give me the riot act. She gave me all those other mornings. But here I was with a place to go. I was going to go check it out, and I didn't drink. I didn't drink that day, and I went to the set. My wife said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to check out this meeting." And she thought I was going to check it out for Victor because I talked to her about that in the morning. I go to the meeting, and I've been to probably 20 open AA meetings with my father, both at picnics or at speaker meetings, where every time somebody come up to me, I'll be like, "Oh no, that's not I'm with George. I'm with George." And the last couple times that I went up to Pennsylvania to visit to go hunting or fishing, I'll make sure I tie one on. So maybe this time I could see what a solution to my misery was. But I would drink that 32-ounce bottle of Gatorade on the 4-hour ride and be too scared. But this time I had a little I had a nudge and nudge. After a moment of clarity, which I didn't have those other times. And I go to this meeting, and the reason I remember this meeting, I tell people, is I very rarely ever write notes down, but the next day I wrote down what happened. And one of the shares was about digging themselves into their townhouse during a snowstorm, only to realize they had no beer. That happened to me twice. And both times I went to the, he went to the Giant, I went to the Ashburn Pub and the lights came on. Another gentleman that was sharing was sharing the reasons I didn't go into the rooms. He said, "I worked hard, I played hard, I exercised hard, and I drank hard." And he said the drank hard at the end. I'm like, holy shit. Those are great excuses that I learned. And after I picked up a 24-hour chip, and after the meeting, my sponsor gave me the five basics and near the literature rack at Club 12. He said, "Can you drink safely?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you willing to go to any length to get and stay sober?" I said, "Yeah," because I thought that's what he wanted to hear. And then he asked me something I've asked other men, and he asked me, "When you take a drink, does the drink take you?" I said, "Yes." And in my mind, it took me to places I didn't want to be, with people I didn't want to be with, doing the things I didn't want to do. And he said, "Don't drink." He said, I'll be at this meeting tomorrow at the Ashburn Presbyterian Church. And that's the church my son had done Cub Scouts in. So I knew where it was. And he got me a big book off the rack. And he told he asked me, he's from the Stepping Stones. So he said, I'll be your temporary sponsor. Okay. And I'll see you tomorrow night. And he told me the two things that changed my life. He says he suggested it. I think he told me. He said he didn't drink today, which I didn't while I was awake, before I went to bed, to get on my knees and thank God I'd stay sober today. And for the first time, I felt some presence. It was the shares in the room. And a solution that I knew worked, but that higher power that I was looking for in the mountains of Colorado was there. And a prayer that I still do every morning, I ask God to keep me sober today. And I ask them to do the next right thing. And I go to that meeting with my sponsor that Monday night. And he asked me to read the first 164 pages. And then he said, what meeting do you want to go to? He was willing to change his meeting schedule to accommodate me. And my ego said, well, this guy cares. So we go to another we go to the Mount Hope meeting, which is my home group. And not that week, but the following week, I heard from about five people that you can do things sober. The guy sitting next to me had a running watch on, and he didn't have to drink a six pack or a 12 pack when on a Sunday afternoon after running 3 miles. The chair had just got back from Colorado, and with his sponsor, and he was sober. The guy that was leading like I'm leading tonight said that he loves the game of golf and picked it up while he was sober. And that was those were aha kind of moments. And I tell people that that I meet in the rooms if you see somebody with a ping or a Titleist hat on, they're probably a golfer. If you hear if you're going into the parking lot of the club and somebody's got a fishing rod on his in his truck, he's probably a fisherman, and he's doing it sober. And I worked the steps with my sponsor after reading those 164 pages because I connected with with that craving. I connected with that mental obsession. And for me, the mental obsession and the craving had been turned around. I thought the mental obsession was that next beer that I'm gonna drink. And my sponsor said, no, that's, did you ever call anybody or anybody call you at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to go drinking? I said, yeah. He said, were you the one at the end that was doing that pretty much every day? I said, yeah. You know, I was a bar drinker. And he said, that's the mental obsession. The craving is that second one that was that's automatic. And he didn't say it that way, but I heard it on a Zoom meeting during COVID. So I was in the rooms for a month, and then the world changed in March of 2020. We went to Zoom, I'm glad that I was that night I was hungover, open and willing. Honesty for me comes just like the drink, 24 hours at a time. It's getting a lot better now. And I was open to that to hearing the message on Zoom. And my second step experience is based on a Zoom meeting. I go to the a Zoom meeting that my father had started. When I said that in our area and other places, the Zoom meetings weren't started by people with a year of sobriety. They're started by people with 20 years, 30 years, and 40 years. And one of the meetings I still could go to on Zoom is a Monday, Wednesday, Friday men's meeting in the area, and it's great because we can share openly and freely about what we're feeling and I just feel good about it. And at this pass it on meeting, about 2 or 3 months into sobriety, I heard Karen, who had 30 plus years of sobriety, say that every day she prayed in the morning on her knees, asking God to keep her sober today, and reading the daily reflection, she stayed sober. And I only had 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks of sobriety. I thought to myself, wait a minute, that same thing has happened to me. And that is that that was that, that was one of the aha moments. And the other aha moment in realizing that this program works is list my sponsor said only he said only listen for a few things. Listen to that guy who's just coming back. He'll tell you what not to do. And what I heard in the parking lot of Club 12, because as soon as you could go to a restaurant and outside, I heard about these outdoor meetings. And we went to this Saturday night meeting. It was at 5:30, and there were only six or so of us. And Adam didn't share until the end. I can use his name because he's no longer with us. He died of the complications of alcoholism, the heart problems, etc. And he said, I drank, and I didn't call I called my sponsor after I drank. And the sponsor asked him those other three questions. He said, the day you drank, did you read any AA literature? He said, no. So the day you drank, did you go to a meeting? He said, no. He said, the day you drank, did you pray? My heart, I don't know, just I felt like I did 6 or 8 months earlier in my first meeting when my sponsor said that last thing. And I'm grateful for that, because the experiences that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous were based on your experience, strength, and hope. When I get laid off last year, I heard from another fellow that was fired. He went right to a 12:15 meeting, and that's exactly what I did when I found out that I was laid off from my company. And you all said you'll get through it. You don't have to pick up a drink or a drug. You don't have to get mad at anybody. It'll take a while to get over the initial shock, but you'll find something else. It just wasn't ready for you. And I was sulking for a couple of 3 or 4 weeks, and I heard at a meeting the one day at a time poem was read at the end of the meeting by a friend of mine, Kevin. And I said, can I have that, or can you email it to me? Because he had it on a printed piece of paper, and he said, you can Google it and you can write it down and you can send me a picture of it, because that's how we work the program there. It's given away, but there has to be willingness to receive it. And here it is. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and for probably three or four months, I read this 3 or 4 times a week in the morning. There are 2 days in every week about which we should not worry. 2 days which should be kept free from fear and apprehension. One of those days is yesterday. It's mistakes and cares, it's faults and blunders, it's aches and pains. Yesterday is beyond our control. All the money in the world cannot bring back yesterday. We cannot undo a single act we performed, or we cannot erase A single word we said yesterday is gone. The other day we should not worry about is tomorrow, with its possible adversaries, its burdens, its large promise, and poor performance. Tomorrow is beyond our immediate control. Tomorrow the sun will rise either in splendor or behind a mask of clouds, but it will rise. Until it does, we have no stake in tomorrow, for it is yet unborn. This leaves only one day, today. Any man can fight the battle for just one day. It's only when you and I add the burdens of those two awful eternities, yesterday and tomorrow, that we break down. It is not the experience of today that drives men mad. It is remorse or bitterness for what something which happened yesterday and the dread of what tomorrow may bring. Let us therefore live one day at a time. And when somebody's struggling with that acceptance, I say Google the one day at a time prayer or saying, and it's I believe it's helped some people. And I'll end with this. When I was struggling. I was arguing with my wife, which happens more than I care to admit, because I was right and she was right and everybody was right. I had a sponsee at the time, and he was struggling with acceptance of his alcoholism. And why should you get rid of those people, places, and things that create that mental obsession that causes them to go for that first drink? And I asked him to read page 417, and then I read 417 to 420, and it shocked me on page 420. It helped me with my relationship with my wife, and that's the perhaps the best thing of all for me is to remember my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. The higher my expectations of Max, I'll add Diane to that, and other people, the lower my serenity. I can watch my serenity levels rise when I discard my expectations. And that was because I was trying to help somebody else, because I was trying to get out of my head by talking to one of my sponsees. But I said I should read I should read that acceptance myself, and I read it to page 420, and that revelation was really, really good. And then it goes on to say, but then my race tried to move in, and they too can force my serenity levels down. I can discard my rights as well as my expectations by asking myself this: how important is it really? And the fact I'm not drinking today is the most important thing. And by my not drinking, I become happy, joyous, and free. That's all I have. Thanks. Thank you.